Welcome back to the Mom Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick, and co-host is Chris Lucian. And we got a pretty exciting topic to talk about today, and that is second order effects. So I'm going to kick it over to Chris to intro this topic.
Yeah. This is something that I think about a lot, and it influences a lot of decision making that I have. I learned about this a while back, and it's basically this idea that in complexity theory, it just talks about complex adaptive systems, and in particular, second order effects is this idea that can be maybe oversimplified to the core component of being your actions have effects, and your effect those effects have side effects, and those side effects might end up having other side effects, right? And so second order effects are kind of the side effects of the side effects. And so if you, for example, stop software estimation, right? Which is something that, actually let's turn it around. Let's do starting software estimation. So if you estimate software, then what are the side effects, right? And so, the outcome is that maybe you have something that you believe you can do some level of decision making on, right? But what are the side effects of that? Well, one side effect that you can call out is that you are pulling the people away from the estimation in order to do the estimate. And so that has an effect, right? You also create an expectation around a time of release, right? So those side effects come up, right? So what are the second order effects of the estimate? Well, it's the side effects of the side effects. And so if you think about it, it's like, okay, now we have this presumed deadline. And so what is that presumed deadline? What side effect does that have on the system as well? And that's when you get into ideas like the Parkinson's effect or the Parkinson's law, or using up basically or increasing the pressure unboundedly until things kind of fall apart. And so you might introduce something that feels harmless, right? But it could be really harmful. Or you could do something that is maybe proactive in some way, but you have some unknown benefit. Even doing something that may on the surface look like it's the wrong direction could actually have side effects of side effects that end up improving performance. So namely, maybe thinking about reducing the amount of overtime people work, right? And so you might immediately think, oh, well, I'm getting more done because I have a lot of people working overtime. But removing it from the system might end up creating a virtuous loop of some kind that you're unaware of. And so what's interesting is about these is that in a lot of complex systems, it's really hard to evaluate these things without experimentation. So it's kind of like where it is in my mind. And I have some ideas about why it works well in mobbing. Austin, do you see second order effects of mobbing that pop out to you given that definition?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think I've said before, when you start mobbing, and at least if you're what I would call mobbing well or whatever, there's a lot of stuff that I say comes for free, a lot of positive second order effects or third order effects and those kind of things. And so I think that's why when many people are skeptical about it and then they try it, there's often a positive response, is because you start feeling and seeing all those effects happen right away, right? And so like, obviously, the first thing that comes to mind is code reviews, right? Those go away for if you're mobbing, right? And so the queuing and waiting time that you normally have in a process where, and I've seen some teams where it's like, well, any piece of code needs to be reviewed by the front-end person, the back-end person, and then this person over here. And then each of those persons have their own queues, and so everything kind of piles and waits. And then you just kind of see that immediately go away. And I remember the first day I was mobbing full time, we pushed something to production and I was like, what is going on? This is insane. You know, like the fact that all that waste is just gone and the quality was high and we released it to production right then and there was incredible. I've also seen the negative side of second order effects and in ways that you can't even coach out of a system, right? Yeah. So you have I've been on teams, previous organizations where there's kind of like individual metrics going on and it was Scrum and it was like kind of going back to the estimates thing. We would have a 2-week sprint and the coach and the manager are there saying the end of the sprint is not a deadline. It's not an estimate. We're there like with the team saying that's not what it is. And then still observing people treating it like a deadline, cutting quality corners, rubber stamping code reviews, you know, all these kind of things. And so, and I've heard of that a couple different places. I think, I heard a talk once where he was saying he doesn't even have trouble with the managers saying the right thing. It's just the way the system is set up. The developers keep operating that way.
Because it's the anxiety that's produced and it's essentially hard to impossible to coach out of a system, especially if you have quite a few developers. I think the key point to look at there is that, it's whenever you introduce some system, you need to look for, the immediate effects, of course, and that's going to be, how it's interpreted or whatever. But then it's like, what are the downstream behaviors? And sometimes it's really hard to see it until it's too late, unless you're really explicitly looking for it. Mm-hmm. Bonus systems that reward people based on pools that can be pulled from by other people. I've seen this work out horribly, or play out horribly, is that, so the bonus system is there, right? And it's there to make people, perform better. They want to do really well. I've seen managers in the past give all of a bonus pool, like 100% of the bonus pool to one person. And then everybody else doesn't have one. Well, what happens is people end up talking in the break room about, the person that, hey, I didn't get a bonus. Oh, I didn't get a bonus either. So they eventually work out amongst themselves who did get the bonus. And then that person gets ostracized on the team and it causes a bunch of other downstream effects. And that impacts code quality. So having a bonus system that rewards an individual actually could be very harmful. And sometimes people don't really realize those things. And so, this happens all the time for different levels of metrics, and that's why metrics have to be dealt with in a loose way, because almost always if you have a hard metric, what's going to happen is it will the hard metric will be gamed, and you've heard this a lot, but the reason is not necessarily because people want to game it. The hard metric gets gamed because a lot of the times because of the second order effects that are coming out of the metric. And so no one's really trying to game it. They just, they see a goal or they see something along those lines and a performance metric. And if they do everything they can to optimize that metric, which people are just kind of inclined to do because they like numbers and high numbers at that, you'll end up getting some really pronounced second order effects out of it.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen that. That's a tough thing. That metrics probably a whole nother episode, but yeah, I was seeing, there was one case where I was seeing the second order effects of metrics and trying to share what I perceived as the truth to power. And it was, and that's a hard thing. It was not received well.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, it seems harmless. Like, oh, I want these numbers and I want, I want to show these things to our stakeholders or our customers. And I'm like, well, when you set that target, here are all the behaviors that are happening because of that, and that. Yeah. So I think from a leadership perspective, I guess maybe this kind of goes to something I was about to say. How do you, whether it's metrics or some sort of leader action, how do you do something like run an experiment, so to speak, so you can change it, right? Because I think often what happens is, a leader will set a metric or change something in the system, right? Add a constraint of some kind. Yep. And then the negative effects start pouring in, but it's kind of like, nope, I've already committed to what the outcome of this constraint to these people. So it's, you know, deal with it.
Well, a lot of it, from my perspective, a lot of it does have, you know, some of it has to do with like track record of that person and things along those lines, like how much trust they have within the organization. If you have somebody that's trusted and can run experiments, then you're kind of in an ideal situation. You know, collecting data, but analyzing later, collecting data and not setting goals around that data is really important, because then you can kind of analyze after the fact and say, you know, did this change, you know, set things up in your environment as an experiment anyway. And so if a new metric is going to go in and it looks like it will never be able to be removed, one really powerful thing you can do is take the data that you have before the performance metric goes in, and take the data you have after, and keep that around until enough time goes by to show the metric's effect on other metrics, right? So you can kind of do this thing where you can prove it out with data. Another one that I like to tell people is appeal to authority. So, you know, this is the kind of thing where it's like, oh, hey, you know, my leaders read Forbes. And so I'm making this up because Forbes kind of has fallen apart a little bit. But Forbes is just a good example. Like, if they read Forbes all the time, then there's likely articles published by Forbes that have things like outcome focused development from the DevOps community. And so there are opportunities these days to be able to stand on the shoulders of giants, so to speak. So that's another big part of it. But some of it, you know, it depends on how far you go into the trust spectrum, but you might find yourself just subtly influencing all the way to, you know, putting together an environment that experimentation is an expected event. And I think that the expectation of experimentation is the best place you can be.
Cool. Yeah. And I think like you said, right, you make the change, but you have a way to see if the change is effective or not, you know, whether it's the numbers. And I would add qualitative or behavioral type stuff that won't show up on a graph, right? That's got to be a check too, right? Because you might be like, code coverage is up, but the behavior is people are writing phony tests. And
if code coverage is up and bugs are up, then something's going horribly wrong, right? And you definitely like see that, right? Or if code coverage is up and bugs are the same, then there's some other behavior that you're not really finding. And so a lot of that is just, you know, hey, we added this measure and what happened afterwards. In my career, a majority of the major changes that have happened, when experimentation maybe was halted, for example, had come from this idea that, things just built up until there was an emergency. And so, you know, I can recall the four different emergencies, and if people have seen my conference talks, you've probably heard them before, but there have been kind of four major emergencies in my career, and every single one of those caused a major shift based on data that we were able to collect and present back to people and get decisions made. You know, it's in those same talks, I talk a lot about the idea that if you're in a situation where you're in a comfortable complacency, that's the worst place you can be, because creating change is extraordinarily difficult and you're bound to be passed up by your competitor. So that's the...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think I have two things to add to that, and then maybe we'll close it out. But one is kind of along the lines of assessing qualitatively what's going on. I recently heard about a developer who the manager set the expectation that, hey, I want your code reviews to be accepted immediately without much pushback from the other developers, right? And from certain perspectives, you can see why, like, I don't want code reviews taking forever, right? But after talking with this developer, the second order effects is any innovative ideas or refactoring or things that were good but might take more back and forth with other developers, he stopped doing. Yeah. And so, you know, if you're a manager or someone who's adding constraints, to talk to people and see like, okay, so I did this expectation, how is that working out? Or, you know, like, to find out the behaviors that are happening, right? And one tool that I've only used once, but I found it very helpful, was in a workshop. And I forget the name of it. Maybe we can find the link. But you do like a circle of effects, right? Where it's like, maybe you can describe it better than me. But what I remember is you draw the effects and then you say, okay, if that happens, what is that going to affect? You know what I mean? Yeah. And you draw to other.
I also don't remember the name off the top of my head right now, but definitely a great exercise. What I would say is come out of this, come away from this video, this podcast, with the idea that if there's an effect then to anything, right, that or if there's a side effect to anything, that side effect has a side effect, and that side effect has a side effect, and that side effect has a side effect. And so individually, just try for yourself and get yourself into this habit. Anytime you're going to make a decision, think, what are the side effects of the side effects? And it's like, I'm going to add this unit test, and okay, the side effect is that code coverage will go up and the thing I know now is going to be implemented, right? But I wrote some extra code. Well, the side effect of that side effect is now you have a method for communicating with other developers in the future without talking to them. And so some piece of intent that you had about this code will become evident to them. And so the second order effect of unit testing is what we're really targeting. It's not the first order of effect of just having the green bubble on the screen, right? So anything like that, and then also the things that you think could be good, but may have negative side effects, they might become really evident to you if you just think one step down the decision path.
Cool. So it's like a good mental exercise, even if it's not a formal activity, to just think deeper about the consequences of what's going to happen. Yeah, I really like that. So I guess we'll close it out. Like and subscribe, please share, and we love all feedback, whether it's through Twitter or YouTube comments. We just love to hear what you guys think, and so we can inspect and adapt on the show. Until next time, have a good one.
We'll see y'all later. Bye.